Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
From the John L. Santikos studio, this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. After months of canceled concerts and a prolonged strike by musicians, the San Antonio Symphony is no more. This makes San Antonio the largest city in the nation without a professional symphony orchestra. So how did this happen? Can this be fixed? What's the future of the San Antonio Symphony? How can San Antonio sustain a professional symphony orchestra? A call into our conversation. We'd love to hear your questions and comments. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can tweet at us at TPRSource. Send us an email to thesource@tpr.org, and you can text us at that call in number 833-877-8255. Texas Public Radio did reach out to the board members and the management of the former San Antonio Symphony to get their side of the story, but we got no response. Also, we asked the City of San Antonio's Office of Cultural Affairs to join us, and they declined to participate. But today, we do have Mary Ellen Gorey, the principal second violin with the musicians of the San Antonio Symphony and the orchestra committee chair. Mary Ellen Gorey, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
With us also, Sebastian Lang Lessing, conductor and music director emeritus of the San Antonio Symphony. Sebastian Lang Lessing, it's always great to talk to you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Jack Morgan's in the studio with us right now. He's the arts and culture reporter for Texas Public Radio News, and he's been covering this for a long time.
Jack. Years and years.
And we're joined on the line by Brian Pekovic. He is the bassoonist and president of the Moses Performance Fund. And Brian Pekovic, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So, Sebastian Lang Lessing, how do we describe the status right now when we say what is happening with the San Antonio Symphony? To say it is no more, it no longer exists, that certainly seems inadequate to summarize where we are right now.
Well, there are two things. There's the San Antonio Symphony, there's the San Antonio Symphony Society, which is the entity that runs or is supposed to run the San Antonio Symphony. So, you cannot wipe out an organization just like that. I think the entity dissolved. That's the first thing that happened by vote of the board. That doesn't necessarily mean that there's no symphony in, but they stopped funding. They stopped operating on their own terms.
So this business operation that sort of helped raise money and organized and ran the show, they stopped existing.
They stopped existing I don't know where we are in the process.
Right. So the musicians themselves, they still exist. So Mary Ellen Gorey, tell us about that part.
Well, I think it's important to differentiate between the San Antonio Symphony and the orchestra. The Symphony Society is no more, but the orchestra is still here. The musicians are here. We haven't gone away.
And you're still making music, still performing.
Yes, we are.
How is that working?
We gave three pairs of extremely successful concerts this spring at the First Baptist Church of San Antonio. Artistically successful, financially successful, very well attended. Sebastian conducted our May concerts, and they went very well. It was a pleasure to be on stage with him again.
Brian Pekovic, you're pretty much taking the lead and trying to get these performances going in many ways and making them financially sustainable. What are you having to deal with?
Well, frankly, it's starting from scratch. Everything that we're doing is positive. And so, we can build from scratch in a very positive way with a lot of the support we have from around the country for the great orchestra that San Antonio has been. It's a great orchestra. A lot of people have been through here, and there are a lot of people really engaged in making this a success artistically, and we have to find a way how to make that financially successful as well. And I think basically you do that by reaching out into the entire community to look for partnerships. And those partnerships are going to be crucial for what we can do going forward.
Jack Morgan, as you have covered this odyssey, the story of the San Antonio Symphony and their struggles, what's the main thing that you want people to recognize right now with the status of the San Antonio Symphony?
Well, to me, these are real people. You know, they're not just people that are up on a stage and you know, dressed up real nice, playing their instruments. These are people who went through a process of trying out for the position, were selected X dollar amount. Yes, if you move here, we'll start you with 33.5 or whatever. And they moved here from Dubuque or Des Moines or, you know, wherever they came from and accepted a job here. And then last year they were told, no, we're going to cut you down to $11,000 a year. That's unsustainable. That's not a wage you can live on. It's kind of an insult to these folks.
So, Mary Ellen, tell us more about the negotiations with the Symphony Society, the management organ is part of this thing. The union with the symphony players had a contract, and we all know that a symphony orchestra needs to have a certain amount of size in order to be legitimate, and that to be a professional orchestra, they have to, you know, you gotta have a certain level of quality. And so was all of that in jeopardy by what the Symphony Society, the management saying they could afford?
Well, yes, but I want to backtrack a little bit because the musicians voluntarily gave back 80% of our salary during the pandemic shutdown in order to help the San Antonio Symphony weather the storm. And when we gave that back, we agreed with our management and board to include a clause that allowed either side to ask to reopen the third year of the contract due to the uncertainties of the pandemic. And so when our board and management asked to reopen the third year, that's when the negotiations started. It became very clear to us very quickly that, in fact, their request to reopen had not so much to do with the pandemic, if anything, and a lot to do with longstanding financial issues. So we were concerned with keeping this the orchestra alive and intact. Their plan would not have allowed for a full-time, fully professional orchestra. It would have put us further on a death spiral downward. You can't attract new talent to come to town when you're offering $11,000 with no benefits. You can't attract new talent to come to town when you're offering $24,000 or even $30,000 is not a living wage for a single person with no dependents in San Antonio. So we would be losing people who would leave for greener pastures and we would not be able to replace them. That is not a sustainable orchestra.
And so, Brian Pekovic, I have about a minute here, but can you sort of follow up on what Mary Ellen said?
Sure. The challenge for us right now is retaining and attracting great talent to the orchestra and to the city. And really, one of the key motivations for me is keeping the orchestra together and on stage. And so going forward, that's what we need to do. We need to be presenting concerts. We need to be out in the schools, out in the public, and just do the work.
So coming back from the break, we'll talk more about how that could happen. What does it take for San Antonio to have a full-time professional symphony orchestra? How is that not an unreasonable thing? But then why are we here right now? Who failed? Something went wrong in order to have reached this situation. So we'll talk about that. The number to call in if you've got a question or comment about the San Antonio Symphony and where we are right now that they have been dissolved. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be back in 1 minute. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the San Antonio Symphony Orchestra and how it has been dissolved by the society that has been running the operation, what happens moving forward. I've got a question or comment. The number is 833-877-8255, and we have Edward on the phone. Edward, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you, sir. I have a comment about the symphony. Mm-hmm. The orchestra, I remember even in elementary school going on a field trip downtown to listen to the orchestra, and it really influenced so many people in my class. I studied music theory for a while. I became a musician for a while. And my wife and I, my wife is European, we go to the symphony all the time. And I think not to have a symphony in San Antonio is a crime. It would make this city and the culture so much less than it is. It is a vital part of the city, I think, and the people should realize that.
Edward, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate that. Sebastian Lang Lessing, a conductor, a music director emeritus for the San Antonio Symphony. Can you react to Edward's comments?
Well, you know, thank you, Edward, for calling in and mentioning actually our YPCs, which are, I think, a very vital part in the symphony's output. I mean, roughly 48% of what the symphony is doing is purely educational. So we are not just, maybe some people think, entertainment for the rich, which is actually not what we are doing, but be an educational institution. So that impact goes very deep into the community. Where we are right now, and actually it is also built on the legacy that Max Reiter started from very early on. We were one of the first orchestras actually to have YPCs in the country, way long time before Leonard Bernstein started the famous YPCs on television. So we have a responsibility, I think, here for history, for heritage, for culture, not only for San Antonio, but nationally. Let's not forget, it was the first orchestra in Texas that was a professional, a full-time orchestra when it started. That didn't start as a community orchestra, the San Antonio Symphony, like Dallas, Austin, Houston, but it started as a professional orchestra with national auditions and attracted actually great players from around the country with a very substantial budget that was raised in 1939 at the dawn of World War II, following the Depression, and was actually really successful in the beginning. So let's not wipe out that part of history, especially the early years that were super successful. And let's not forget that building on that success, the city, the county voted, the taxpayer voted to build the Tobin Center. And a lot of money went into that to become our home. So nobody would have thought that with a new building like this, we would ever be in trouble again, you know, under the slogan "too big to fail," with the $200 million building being built as a resident for a resident company. You know, you would think we were already now too big to fail to go down a spiral that would actually diminish the budget. Everybody's projecting a growth in the budget. That's where we needed to go, and I think we all planned for that. So what happened is just a chronicle underfunding that continued. I think the big problem with the San Antonio Symphony was always that the pay of the musicians, the payroll, needed to be raised on a monthly basis, which is something you cannot do. It's not sustainable and it's very risky because you face bankruptcy basically every single paycheck. Other orchestras cover that through endowments or, you know, or other funds, but we had to basically raise it on a monthly basis, and that's where it was dangerous. But we managed to do, you know, even with emergency fundraising, we managed to do that on an $8.5 million budget in recent years. So it was doable, but we needed to build a fund that allows us to actually guarantee that pay. And now we need to find other solutions to have not constantly question payroll, because that's the most important thing. If you offer a contract to people to come down here, you need to be sure that you're able to pay them. That is very crystal clear. So that's what needs to change structurally, I think, to build trust. Not only with the community, but also with musicians. And to come back to what Brian said, you know, attract talent, you need to be responsible and you need to have the funds to do that. And yeah, I think there are many ways of getting there.
I want to ask a question. So what about the assets of the San Antonio Symphony in the letter that was put out that announced they were filing for Chapter 7 and they were going to have a trustee and they would dissolve the assets of the San Antonio Symphony. Nathan Cohn, our director of KPAC, our classical music station, has a question about that. And he wants to know what's going to happen to the library, the musical library, the recordings of the symphony, and the sheet music owned by the organization or other equipment. But he really wants to know about the decades of recordings of the orchestra. He sees this as important history, and he thinks that Texas Public Radio would serve as a great steward to archive the San Antonio Symphony's past recordings, and if that's something that is available to us in this transition. And so, Mary Ellen Gorey, if you have anything to add to that.
Well, I think we're all concerned about the history, about the recordings, about the music library. The Symphony Society filed Chapter 7. That is a complete dissolution. And at the moment of filing, it's my understanding that a bankruptcy trustee was appointed, and all of the assets are now under the control of the bankruptcy trustee. We have attorneys who are looking into the filing and the assets, but at the moment, any asset they have is under the control of the bankruptcy trustee.
All right, and Brian Pekovich, do you have something to add to that?
The only thing I would add is that, Mary Ellen's absolutely correct. I don't think they can dispose of any assets right now. And at some point, the bankruptcy judge will have to determine how all those assets are distributed. Either, someone comes in and buys them, or the assets, the bankruptcy judge can negotiate with the debtors for relief and see where those assets might go after all the creditors are paid. I believe there's an opportunity. I mean, those recordings are great. They are going to stay in San Antonio. But for the short term, I don't think we have access to them. It's really under the trustees' care.
Right. And I think it's too soon to be picking over the bones of the symphony, but we want to look forward to how we can preserve the symphony, and hopefully there's always going to be a home for that. We do want to make sure that, that if there is a room, KPAC, our classical music station, would be able for that. I want to go to another caller, and we have Sean. Sean, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I grew up I love the symphony, but I grew up in the military in a lower income family, and we were very fortunate that the military provided a lot of symphony on the bases for free. And so going forward, if the symphony does come back, in what ways do you plan on reaching out to our citizens here? This is a minority-majority city. We are one of those economically segregated, yet it seems like this symphony is not reaching out on the south side and the west side. There seems to be opportunity to be able to build a bigger audience, which may mean doing things like free concerts in the park that get money off of, vendors versus having these expensive tickets in the concert hall. So how are you going to incorporate what our city is, which is not just a middle class, upper class white city? Thank you.
Let me get a response to that from Brian Pekovich. Do you have a response?
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what I've been preaching for the last several months and for a long time before that. We would love to partner with the military in a meaningful way to be on base. I think that got more difficult in the past. But really, what we need help with right now, and that I think can be the game changer for us, is marketing. Really having another level of marketing expertise involved with what the symphony can do for our community and where we can go out. And I think that is really an important part of reaching the entire community. Right now, we have obviously the true believers that are following us, and we need to reach out to everybody else. And so I think this is a great opportunity for us to really look at where we go and how we reach people. And just the other day, I got a call from someone that was looking to do some concerts out on the west side, and we're already looking at that for September and October. So I think we're on the right track.
have a text message question or comment. It says, it's unfair to blame the administrative staff that inherited the thousands of debt the symphony had accumulated over the decades. Why is the blame on them? Well, let me go to Jack Morgan on that. I mean, have people been blaming the management? Or who? I mean, people have wondered, like, if the fundraising has been anemic. I've heard that.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that the corporate side of things in San Antonio does not support the symphony nearly so much as they do in Dallas and Fort Worth and Houston.
Well, Frost Bank has been a big supporter.
Big supporter, sure. But if you look at the percentages between what San Antonio, the management of the San Antonio Symphony has been able to raise versus those in Houston and Dallas, it's really not good. They don't do nearly so well. And I'm not trying to blame the symphony management. It is a very difficult job that they were doing. But, you know, in terms of the track record, it's pretty clear that they weren't able to find the money it takes to put on a professional symphony.
Sebastian Lang Lessing, I mean, how do you see the management's role in where we are right now?
Well, let's actually, I don't even know if they can file. They're not bankrupt. The symphony is not bankrupt because they haven't actually paid any artists for the last 2.5 years almost, right? You have been paid 20% of what you should have been paid in the first season post-pandemic, and then nothing at all. No guest artists have been paid, you know, no music director or other conductors have been paid normally because nothing has really happened. So, and then there was the PPP money. So where did this all go? So I don't think that debt is the main problem here. And in terms of raising money, yes, I don't even know what activity has been taken during that time that was silent, especially in the pandemic, to raise money. I know that all the initiatives that have been done, and I had talks with Corey Coward about it when the pandemic struck, he would not support any of the activities that the symphony, that the musicians put up, whether it was our Mahler 2 that Steve Pedersen put together virtually. All these activities were done by the musicians. Already then, that was a great opportunity to raise money, to keep awareness going, and that hasn't happened. So, yeah, I mean, they have to take responsibility for not raising money during that time. I think it's very fair to say, though.
And Mary Ellen Corey?
I do want to say that over the years, we've had many very hardworking people, both on our board and on our staff. I think where there has been a lack has been an emphasis on a false economy of not spending the money to hire the necessary professional development staff. We've always had at most one person, and they're doing their best, but it's a job that is bigger than one person. I'm not casting blame at anybody, but this is where we are now.
So we did reach out to the symphony board, and we asked them to participate in our on-air discussion. We didn't get any response. Also, we did ask that the City of San Antonio's cultural department participate today, and they declined as well. We're going to continue talking about the San Antonio Symphony. What is the future of the symphony? How can it be saved? Why is this so important for a city like San Antonio? Call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can tweet at us at TPRSource, send us an email to thesource@tpr.org, and you can text us at the call-in number 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the status of the San Antonio Symphony. The society that ran the symphony, the management, the board, they dissolved the symphony recently, but we still have players. They want to play, musicians that want to make music for San Antonio, and they're eager to get back to work. But what form will that take? And They have standards. This is a world-class professional symphony orchestra, and that's not something that just falls out of the off the turnip truck. This is something you have to create and nurture and maintain. Already, we're seeing talent fleeing San Antonio because of the situation. We have to decide as a city, as a community, is this something that we want? And then what are we willing to do in order to maintain it? We want to hear from you. Call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to a caller. We have Jim on the line. And Jim, you're on the air.
Oh, yes. I have 3 points to make quickly. Number one, okay, with symphony orchestra audiences, the percentage of ticket sales is dropping all over the country. Okay, it's difficult to get audiences now. It's more difficult. With that in mind, and we have a beautiful hall, would it be out of the box to share resources with Austin, which has an orchestra? We have Austin Baroque Orchestra comes down here, does concerts. Could we do something like that? It would be a lot of work, but I'm just putting that out. Secondly, the lack of response from the Office of Cultural Affairs and from the board says volumes to me. That's the big part of the problem. But I'm not going to go on about that. And thirdly, is there a way to train boards of organizations like this to be financially responsible, to go out and get money? Do they know how to do it, or are they engaged enough to do it? Those are my points. I know one of them is out there, but with scarce resources, we have to think about something new. Okay, thank you.
All right, Jim, thank you. So, Brian Pekovic, if you could talk about the first point he brought up about combining resources with Austin, is that feasible?
I mean, the Austin Symphony is an organization. I mean, it.
Say Austin that again, Symphony, you kind of broke up.
I was having trouble getting the question as well. Austin Symphony is its own organization. It's, you know, Austin has a lot of civic pride, and I think San Antonio should have the same amount of civic pride in our symphony. And obviously there are people that are very good in Austin, and in the short term, we might have to bring some people down. But as far as trying to find a way, you know, that in that way, I think we can work together as a musical community, but San Antonio really needs its civic pride in its orchestra.
To this thing about ticket sales going down, Mary Ellen Gorey, a lot of people, I know I don't like going to places where there are a lot of people sitting around because of COVID. And also you wonder if the younger generations are willing to support symphonies. So what's your view there?
Well, the ticket sales, I would dispute that argument. When there is proper marketing, we sell tickets. And all of our concerts at First Baptist Church this spring were extremely well attended. So I would take some issue with that. Of course, the argument about the aging of the audience, that argument's been going on for 100 years or more. And the truth is, it's cycles of life. People in their 20s, 30s, 40s, it's not that they're not interested, but they maybe don't have the discretionary income at that time, or they don't have the time. But these people are paying for their children to have music lessons. When people hit their 50s and beyond, all of a sudden they've got more time, they've got more money, they start coming to the symphony. So our audiences are not really a good way to judge who's interested and who's not.
And there's no other experience. It's irreplaceable to be able to enjoy a symphony orchestra in person. If you think you're going to get that experience listening to a CD or MP3 or the radio, it's just not the same thing, completely different. And Sebastian?
Well, we have to see one funding model that will fail no matter what, is that you cover 40% of your budget with ticket sales. That's what we try to do. And it is not a question how many tickets you sell, but at what price you sell them. And I think looking at the demographics of San Antonio, and that's why you were successful with a $20 ticket, versus a $95 ticket at the Tobin Center, I think we have to review ticket pricing in general. And if you look at the European or models in other countries that are largely government funded, the ticket revenue doesn't make more than 10 to 15% of the budget. And I think that is realistic, and that will keep the houses full, especially that, you know, one of our callers actually mentioned ticket pricing being an obstacle. And I think we need to review that, and we need to, this is not a sacred cow. We need to rethink that ticket revenue, maybe 20, maybe 25% in an ideal world, but not doesn't have to be more. Funding needs to come from other sources. I want to say something about public funding. You know, one board member said to me, well, actually, we are already publicly funding orchestras here because, you know, even private donations are tax deductible, and therefore the taxpayer is paying for that. So what is wrong with going directly to the taxpayer and fund the arts? We have done that with the Tobin Center, and the voters were happy with that. Why not doing that with the creative class? I mean,
sure. I read Bob Rivard's piece in the Senate Committee Report where he lays out other cities in the U.S. have
we've talked
districts.
Yeah.
And so is that something that San Antonians would support? It would take a citywide or a countywide vote.
And that's why I want to say something about the city not participating. We have been in contact with the city. I had a meeting with the mayor. I had a meeting with the judge. There is very positive response, and there's definitely support for the symphony orchestra from Ron Nuremberg or from Nelson Wolf. And I guarantee that will also be the case for the successor of Nelson. I think we need to be very positive here. It's just, of course, for the elected officials, a more delicate situation. But I really hope that the city and the county come in really in a big capacity to turn this around.
And Jack Morgan?
You know, there's something that the city does that very few cities do, and that's to completely redo its waterways. The San Antonio River was completely redone all the way down to 1604. Now they're doing San Pedro Creek. These are wonderful projects that I think are great, but they cost a lot of money. What was it, like $140 million and $170 million for the two? That's money that won't be funding the symphony.
Yeah, but okay, those are drainage projects. There's a lot of federal dollars that go into these things. Mm-hmm. So it's a mix of things.
It is.
So I want to ask a question about the ticket sales really quickly. So in the when y'all were selling tickets at the Tobin with the Symphony Society, was that going through Ticketmasters? Did it have all those bloated surcharges added on?
The Toby does it. So this is the Tobin Center ticketing system. They also have high surcharges. Yes, you buy $25 tickets and you get an extra $16 of charges. Yes.
And so, but the way you're doing it now, Mary Ellen, none of that's there.
No.
You're paying directly to the musicians.
There was a small surcharge. I don't remember what it was, but it certainly wasn't in the neighborhood of what the Toby charged.
All right. Let's go to the voicemail from Justice.
Hi there. My name is Justice. I'm a musician in San Antonio and a supporter of the San Antonio Symphony and also of the Musicians Union. With that said, I have to wonder if San Antonio is geographically set up to support a full-time professional orchestra. So much of San Antonio's affluence resides far away from where the symphony typically performed, which lies in contrast to the other major cities in Texas, where you see large communities of folks who are likely to have disposable time and income to go see and support an orchestra, residing very close to or in their downtown areas. It probably isn't at all feasible to do this, and it certainly isn't very glamorous to remove the downtown allure, but I wonder how the symphony's support would have looked if their primary performance venue was located in a part of town like Alamo Heights or Stone Oak.
And Mary Ellen Gorey, you wanted to answer that.
Well, I think that's a valid point. I don't think we should abandon downtown, but I completely agree that we should be reaching out and performing in other communities closer to our audience. Many of our audience members are elderly. They don't necessarily want to drive downtown after dark. I agree with that point. As far as the question about whether we can geographically support an orchestra, I would say that's a compelling argument that we need to have an orchestra, because we aren't within easy driving distance of another city with a major orchestra. So because we are geographically isolated here, we need to maintain the fully professional orchestra that we've had.
But we have the Tobin, and the Tobin in and of itself is a finely tuned instrument set up to listen to you know, live, unamplified music and be able to feel it on your skin. And it is a great venue. And it is, should that be a problem, Sebastian Lang Lessing?
No, that should not be the problem. That should be part of the solution. I mean, that should be the guarantee. You know, we went to the taxpayer agreed to fund this building, and now it needs to be guaranteed that the content is funded as well. I mean, that's just the logic consequence for it. I think the mistake that sometimes is made, that you build a building and then you think it has to run like a business, with for an arts venue, doesn't work. That doesn't work for any opera house in the world. That doesn't work for any concert hall in the world that has the mission of presenting the fine arts, because it is not a commercial business. So the Tobin was given this without the proper funding to support the resident companies. I think that mistake needs to be corrected, and we need to be back in there as soon as possible. So I think the obligation to the taxpayer is clear, and I think that obligation needs to be fulfilled by subsidizing also the creative class and keep them in San Antonio. And what your caller said about geographically, that is the main problem also for us, not being able to recruit musicians locally as subs to complement from a smaller core to a bigger symphony orchestra. That is not possible. That's possible in New York, but it's not possible in San Antonio, because we just don't have also the institutions.
Okay, we're taking a break. When we come back, I mean, we're going to really talk about this. I mean, is this really just dollars and cents? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're finishing up our discussion talking about the San Antonio Symphony. Got a lot of callers on the board. I'm going to get you on the air. I don't want to boil it down to one quick question first, though, and maybe, Sebastian, you can answer this for me. So what was the budget of the symphony that they said it was not sustainable, and what do you think the budget ought to be for the, and if that money can be raised in San Antonio? I mean, what is it breaking down, looking at the spreadsheet?
So the in recent years, the budget has been between $7.5 and $8.75 million. And they want to bring it down under $5 million. The budget size in itself doesn't say anything about sustainability, because it's just the money you have disposable. But that means also less activity. You can blow up your budget by doing movies that bring in revenue. So the budget size doesn't tell much about sustainability at all, especially if you shrink the budget to a degree where an even larger portion of the budget is solely to pay, to put into payroll. That makes it even more risky. If you look at the big orchestras with a budget of $80 million, the payroll to the musicians is
right. We're not talking about that. We're talking about here locally.
Yeah.
So you think what, a $10 million budget?
I think realistically where we need to be in 5 years is $15 million. $15 million is a sustainable budget over the next 5 years to get to that level. So to be in 5 years at a level where you can actually follow inflation, follow cost of living, and raise pay to a degree, and invest into the infrastructure that you need to raise, meaning also a development department. So it would pay for itself. So a bigger budget doesn't necessarily mean less sustainable. In contrary, it means it has potential to grow. And that's where I need to start. Okay. If you start from 7.5, go to 15 million over 5 years, that is a reasonable plan.
Oh, okay. And so, I mean, one thing you know, Mary Ellen, is that you can't cut your way towards success in that area.
You cannot cut your way.
And so, and let me see here. And so, Jack, where are we right now? And I mean, Sebastian's talking about three times the budget that the symphony says they could afford when they were still in existence.
Boy, I don't know what to say about that. They're not doing anything, so it's not like they're going to come up with any money. They are dissolved.
Yeah, but that's what they were at. They were saying this is where we needed to be.
You have to be aspirational if you're going to put together a nonprofit arts-related organization and near as I can tell, they were not.
All right, so let me get a caller in on this, and we have John. John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, hello, hello. Okay, I got four quick things to say. First, by doing the San Antonio Symphony, we are depriving the talented children of San Antonio of the best musical instruction around. And professional musicians, one of the few professions where your success as an adult is measured by how hard you work as a kid. You ask any of those musicians, when did you start playing the oboe or the cello or the violin? They'll say grade school. How many lawyers started in grade school? Okay. The next point is the San Antonio Youth Symphony Orchestras. We got several of them. Who coaches the sectional rehearsals, the cellos, the violins, everybody? Symphony musicians. One of the musicians from the symphony conducted the middle school orchestra, one of them. Third, we have wonderful chamber music series here. Who plays in those? Primarily San Antonio symphony musicians. Some of those series of chamber music are incredible. I used to live in Boston. I know what I'm talking about. Number four, what was it? I forget now. But if the other caller mentioned downtown is, you know, no one wants to go downtown. Well, how come Mayor Ron, when he budgeted another bucket of millions of dollars, a second payoff to the Alameda Theater, saying what vibrates downtown, what happens downtown vibrates throughout the city. Well, one thing ain't vibrating throughout the city anymore, the sound of symphonic music. And why did they give the Spurs $17 million to build their training facility on top of the Edwards Aquifer Recharge Zone? Are the Spurs so poor they can't afford their own building? I'll shut up now. Keep up the good work.
All right, John, thank you for that. I want to just get to one main point you made, the top one, to go to Brian Pekovich, about how the San Antonio Symphony Orchestra is part of this overall infrastructure of talent that we have that feeds into so many different organizations in the city, like the San Antonio Youth Orchestra and chamber music and other performances, right?
Yeah, the performances that we do downtown are the tip of the iceberg for what we do out in the community. Not only do we also go out to these young people's concerts out in the community that a lot of people don't see or we don't advertise well, but as individuals, we are out playing chamber music, we are out teaching, we are out doing master classes all year round, and that's because people live here. If people aren't living in San Antonio, if musicians aren't living in San Antonio, that does not happen. And that is a big part of why we need to keep the orchestra here in town and why we need to keep musicians here in town.
All right, got another caller, and let's go to Dog. Dog, you're on the air.
Hey, David.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for taking my call. I think you've hit it right on the nail on the head. Sustainability, dollars and cents. How does San Antonio compare to Dallas and Houston with the endowment situation? Best of all possible worlds, a magic wand. Let's get Mr. Butts or Mr. McComb. $100 million endowment. We can live off the interest of that $100 million. That's your sustainability. Never touch it. It's an investment plan. I mean, we can. It's feasible. Those guys got the money, and so we just need the right PR approach to beg those guys and exalt, name the damn Tobin Center, Tobin McComb Center or something, and get the money in there.
All right. So, Jack, you've looked at other cities and their endowments. How does San Antonio's compare?
It's been a couple of years, but there was $80 million in Dallas or Houston and $60 million in one of the others. And I think the symphony was 1.8 million, something like that.
I think we have like 2.4.
Yeah,
right
it's
now.
About 2 million.
Yeah.
So the difference is staggering, really, between them.
All right. And so let me try and get one more caller in on this. And we have Craig on the line. Craig, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes. You know, I can tell you how much a violin costs or a piano or a building or, but you can't put a price on music. You know, a tune that people carry with them comes from a higher place. And, you know, talking about like Leonard Bernstein, this music is the only music that's played that's hundreds of years old, you know, and you won't hear any of these modern songs 100 years from now. But I think that being able to be innovative, like, for instance, you mentioned Leonard Bernstein. He wrote his own music. They played the orchestra that he, his music. They made plays. And this is 2022. You look back to 1922, and you see a paradigm. You see a parallel going on in the whole world. The whole world is changing. And I think there's a movement more, this is another area, but more from the heart to the mind. But the music, it's organic. You can't put a price on it. The demographics in San Antonio is changing, and there are people moving in here. So, I you know, it's complicated. I'm a composer, and I've got to get to my piano. I'm working on a new piece, beautiful music. I would, if the San Antonio wants to give a shot on a couple of my pieces, I'd be more glad to.
All right,
you know,
Craig.
Let him give a shot.
Awesome. Thank you for calling and appreciate that. So help us understand, to summarize, where we are right now, Mary Ellen Gorey. So we have the musicians. They have come together, and that you guys are performing, and you plan to have, what, another season, or how's that working?
We're planning concerts for this coming season. It's important to note that the San Antonio Symphony has never had a summer season, and so many musicians, including me, have left town every summer. That isn't different this year. So our board is working very hard. Brian and his and our colleagues on the board are working very, very hard this summer to make plans for the fall, but it's normal that we don't perform in the summer.
And so Brian Pekovich, how is that the road forward of the musicians themselves leading the organization, or should there be a whole new type board management operation that needs to be created?
Well, we are a 501c3. It started with five musician board members, but we're already reaching out and diversifying that board. And really, we're looking to create something new and vital and innovative. And I just have to say that a lot of this work has already been done as far as what do we do next. There was a city-county task force in 2018 with a lot of recommendations and a path forward. And a lot of the questions about endowments, budget size, they're answered in that document. And I might put that up, if I can, on your website.
And so, Brian, the people who are on the board, they tend to come from, have an ability to raise money. That's why they're on the board, right? It's part of their job.
Right now, it's everyone's job to raise money.
But in the traditional sense, when you have
the traditional sense,
like, you know, you pick people on a board who care about the community, who are invested, have a love for classical music. They recognize that this is important for a community like San Antonio. They're willing to put in their time and also go out there and raise money. That's what they do.
Right, and we need that, but we also need the diversity that the other caller was talking about at the beginning of the show. We need to reach out to the entire community.
All right, and Sebastian Lang Lessing, what's your take on things in 10 seconds? How do you feel about where we are right now?
I think it's time for a new start, you know, a fresh start, and cleaning up the mess and leave it behind, and come with a very positive message, and maybe in a couple of months. We have something that really works.
And Jack Morgan will cover that on Texas Public Radio as an arts and culture reporter. Thank you, Jack, for joining us. Mary Ellen Gorey with the musicians for the San Antonio Symphony, and Sebastian Lang Lessing, conductor, music director emeritus for the San Antonio Symphony, and Brian Pekovich, he's now the performance fund manager for MOSIS. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.